This program is intended for individuals who are blind or are unable to read physical print and is brought to you by CABVI's Audio Information Services team.
This is Joe Palmer reading the opinion section of USA Today on Wednesday, May 8th, 2024. Colleges Punish Seniors Over Campus Protests by Sarah Pequeño. For weeks now, students across the country have been protesting in support of Palestinians during the ongoing Israel-Hamas war. They have been met with police officers who have arrested more than 2,500 people nationwide and widespread criticism. Now some colleges are going as far as to punish graduating seniors. Overreaction compared with 1968 Columbia, 1970 Kent State. On Monday, Columbia University in New York City announced that it will cancel its main graduation ceremony due to security reasons related to this week's protests on its campus. It isn't the first school to make this decision. The University of Southern California canceled commencement in Los Angeles last month, and Emory University in Atlanta is changing the location of its ceremony. There will still be department ceremonies at Columbia and USC. Both will have celebrations for the graduates. This isn't the same as turning the tassel with hundreds of classmates. It's a shame that universities are so scared of protesters that they ruin the year for everyone. It's also an overreaction that is a different response from previous protests. Columbia still managed to have its 1968 spring graduation at a new location despite anti-war and civil rights protests that mirrored the ones we see today. Kent State University even managed to hold a ceremony in 1970 after four anti-war college students were killed and nine injured by the Ohio National Guard. Perhaps the administrations of Columbia and USC aren't trying to emulate past decisions despite acting in ways that evoke memories of previous protests. Perhaps they were made nervous by protests at Indiana University and University of Michigan graduations. Either way, it seems unfair to the majority of students who did not participate in any wrongdoing. USC's decision feels particularly shameful. The administration initially canceled the valedictorian address from Asna Tabassum, an engineering student and Muslim American who was criticized for having a pro-Palestinian hyperlink in her social media bio. Columbia's decision to cancel graduation is the final say-so on a tumultuous semester, one that the university leaders exacerbated by having a large police presence on campus even before Hamilton Hall was overtaken by protesters. It's not surprising that their decisions have continued to disappoint in the aftermath. Action should have consequences, and I doubt that any students involved in Hamilton Hall break-in would disagree. It makes sense that those students would face punishment from the university. It does not make sense for the entire 2024 class to lose out on college graduation. Hamas ceasefire proposal and Israel attacking Rafah. Meanwhile, Hamas leaders have said that they will accept a ceasefire proposal from Egypt and Qatar. This news comes hours after Israel announced plans to attack Rafah, a city in Gaza that has become a refugee for more than 1 million Palestinians since October 7th. A ceasefire would likely quell some of the angst that we've seen on college campuses, but it won't change the events of the past few weeks. How university administrations have reacted to these protests will follow them for years and create strained relationships with their alums. For students who have protested, this is all a formative experience. They should remember some victories, like the university's commitment to meeting with students to discuss divesting funds from Israel. Even that is a huge step towards the collective goal shared by Gen Z protesters. I hope it doesn't destroy the spirit of these young people who want to see a world unlike the one we grew up in. Follow USA Today elections columnist Sarah Pequeño on X, formerly Twitter, at Sarah Pequeño, and Facebook, facebook.com/PequeñoWrites. Parents Like Me Need the Kids Off Social Media Act by Nicole Russell. Parents worry a lot about things, but one of our persistent concerns is our kids' smartphones. We justify their use by embracing their necessity. How else can we communicate with school pickups and sports practices? With that comes access to various minefields, from gaming to social media. As they go off to school and other activities, we wonder if they see things they shouldn't, talk to people they shouldn't, or rot their brains with excessive screen time. The remedies are obvious, just hard to implement. Don't get kids a phone, ban social media, or allow social media with boundaries and parental controls. A new federal bill might help parents find a solution. Parents, children face challenges with social media and smartphones. We know now that excessive social media use increases depression and anxiety. A 2023 Surgeon General Advisory found that 40% of children ages 8 to 12 are on social media. Social media and smartphone use have become so commonplace and ubiquitous that it truly does seem hard, if not impossible, to police given everything parents have going on, including working a full-time job, maintaining relationships, and caring for themselves and their children. I have 4 children, and I am constantly ruminating over the question, what is more important than my child's physical safety and emotional well-being? 3 of my children have phones, so I've banned social media altogether. They also have limits on their screen time and can't keep their phones in their rooms overnight. I still check their phones regularly, but confess that constant surveillance has become an omnipresent task that provides endless questions and few solutions. What's the best way to help our kids navigate technology? There are ways to hide social media apps and bypass parental controls. Once kids become teenagers, they're not sitting in the living room 24/7 under parental supervision. They're often in school with friends, working a job, on an athletic team, or maybe playing in an instrument. They're busy, but still on their own phones. Most parents know that social media use, especially multi-hour daily use, isn't great for their teen's emotional health, but they feel ill-equipped to help their teen handle something as big as social media has become. Did you see that TikTok has been one of the most common refrains in high school now? In fact, fitting in with their peers is probably the only upside to social media if conformity is a plus. It's not. The downsides are worse than most parents realize. In January, Congress grilled the CEOs of Meta, TikTok, and others and revealed that sexual predators are rampant and other negative behaviors like bullying and eating disorders are magnified. Worse, all the executives knew this existed, and while they seemed to be genuinely trying to curb it, their own efforts fell short. Bipartisan proposal could give parents the help they need. This issue is so pressing that it spurred a Republican and a Democrat to co-sponsor legislation that would essentially ban social media for young children. If passed, the Kids Off Social Media Act would prevent kids younger than 13 from accessing social media, prohibit social media from programming algorithms for teens under 17, and give schools the ability to block access to social media. It's part of multiple attempts by lawmakers to place guardrails around the internet for children, including the Kids Online Safety Act. Senator Ted Cruz, Republican Texas, and Brian Schatz, Democrat Hawaii, both dads, have paired up to unveil the Kids Off Social Media Act in Senate Committee on Commerce, Science, and Transportation. It's really hard to be a teenager today, and it's incredibly frightening to be a parent today, Cruz told the Washington Post. This legislation is trying to take a meaningful step to protect our kids. If passed, it's easy to see how parents elsewhere, as well as school administrators and teachers, might sigh a breath of collective relief. However, it seems well within the purview to ban smartphones during class and block access to social media on district Wi-Fi, some things that schools in Florida have already done and more are considering. The legislators say they haven't met a parent who doesn't support the bill because they feel pressure for their kids to be on social media. The reality of the life is there's a moral hazard, and no parent wants to be the one that forces his or her child to be excluded from school's social scene, to ostracize from their friends, so Cruz told me. And so I've had multiple conversations with moms and dads who are frustrated. They don't want their kids using these devices on these social media sites, but I think parents as a whole would much prefer that all the kids be protected. And this bill was designed to strike a compromise. As a parent, I welcome a federal social media ban for kids. Parental rights advocates on the social media argue that social media helps marginalize children or is their only outlet even at an young age. Others on the right might balk at the bill that intervenes with their own role as a parent. It's also anti-ethical, some might say, for a Republican to sponsor a bill allowing a government bureaucracy to intervene in a child's daily habits. Social media companies won't like the bill either. They'll claim it it's unconstitutional. Cruz, like many conservatives, has departed from the more liberal, libertarian, live and let live stance. As a parent, I have yet to see how rampant social media use for kids under 13 is helpful or good for them, so I welcome a targeted and carefully crafted ban. It takes the issue out of the parents' hands, just like laws about driving, alcohol consumption, or tattoos. The Federal Trade Commission enforcement of the ban is tied to the bill, so the FTC couldn't deviate from the text, preventing a slippery slope of additional bans. Parenting is already challenging. Figuring out how to balance a tool that has become necessary and harmful makes it more so. Kids like mine wouldn't need an adjustment period, and if the bill passes and 11-year-olds become distraught because it's enforced, that might underscore its importance. Nicole Russell is an opinion columnist with the USA Today. She lives in Texas with her 4 kids. Tennessee firm fined $650,000 for hiring kids. Children hired to clean meatpacking facilities by Tao Nguyen. A Tennessee-based cleaning company has agreed to pay nearly $650,000 in civil penalties after federal investigators found the company employed at least 24 children at 2 slaughtering and meatpacking facilities, the U.S. Department of Labor announced. A federal court in Iowa approved a consent order and judgment Monday with Fayette Janitorial Services, LLC, which requires the company to pay $649,304 in civil penalties, the Labor Department said in a news release. The company must also hire a third party to implement company policies to prevent the illegal employment of children and create a program for reporting concerns about child labor violations. The Labor Department obtained a preliminary injunction against Fayette Janitorial in late February after an investigation discovered that the company employed at least 24 children, including children as young as 13, on overnight shifts at 2 slaughtering and meatpacking facilities in Sioux City, Iowa, and Accomack, Virginia. Under U.S. law, under 18 are prohibited from being employed in dangerous occupations such as meat and poultry slaughtering, processing, rendering, and packing operations. According to the Labor Department, Fayette Janitorial had minors clean dangerous kill floor equipment such as head splitters, jaw pullers, meat bandsaws, and neck clippers. The Department of Labor is determined to stop our nation's children from being exploited and endangered in jobs that they should never be near. Regional Solicitor Christine Harris said in a statement, children in hazardous occupations drove the Fair Labor Standards Act passage in 1938, yet in 2024, we still find U.S. companies employing children in risky jobs, jeopardizing their safety for profit. The Labor Department reported last February that children labor violations have increased 69% since 2018. During the last fiscal year, the department said its investigators found more than 5,800 children had been employed in violation of federal child labor laws. Fayette Janitorial, which is headquartered in Somerville, Tennessee, employed dozens of children at Seaboard Triumph Foods, LLC in Iowa and Purdue Farms in Virginia, according to the Labor Department. According to a federal complaint, the Labor Department's investigation found that Fayette employs minors under the age of 18 whose job it is to clean killing floors. In the complaint, the department says the company employed 15 children in Virginia and at least 9 children in Iowa on its overnight sanitation shifts. The department said investigators witnessed children hiding their faces and carrying glittered school backpacks before starting their shifts at the Iowa facility. The children use corrosive cleaners to clean kill floor equipment. At the Virginia facility, the department said at least one child, who is identified as a 14-year-old, suffered severe injuries after the child tried to remove debris from machinery. On February 27th, the department obtained a preliminary injunction against Fayette Janitorial to halt the company's employment of children. The company provided contract sanitation and cleaning services for meat and poultry processing facilities in more than 30 states and employs more than 600 workers, the department said. The company agreed to nationwide compliance 6 days after the department filed a temporary restraining order in the injunction. The Iowa and Virginia facilities also said in February that they had terminated their contracts with Fayette Janitorial. In recent years, federal authorities have been cracking down on child labor violations across the country, promising to hold employers accountable. In March, a Tennessee parts supplier was fined for illegally employing children as young as 14 in dangerous jobs and subjecting them to oppressive child labor. In the same month, a Baskin-Robbins franchisee in Utah was fined for allowing 64 employees aged 14 to 15 to work too late in the day and too many hours in a week while school was in session at 8 locations, the Labor Department said. Federal investigators said in January the inadequate safety standards at a poultry processing plant in Mississippi led to the death of a 16-year-old sanitation worker. The teen died on July 14, 2023, after he was pulled into a dangerous machinery while cleaning the equipment. It was the second fatality at the facility in just over 2 years. A Southern California poultry processor and several related poultry companies, which supplied grocers, including Aldi's and Ralph's, agreed to pay $3.8 million last December for violations including illegally employing children as young as 14 to debone poultry with sharp knives and operate power-driven lifts to move pallets. In May of 2023, three McDonald's franchisees with a combined 62 restaurants in Kentucky, Indiana, Maryland, and Ohio paid fees totaling more than $212,000 after the Labor Department charged them with violating the labor rights of 305 minors, including two 10-year-olds who were not paid. A Wisconsin company paid a $1.5 million fine in February 2023 after the Labor Department found it employed 102 minors aged 13 to 17 in hazardous occupations at 13 meat processing facilities in 8 states. Contributing to this article is also Keenan Thomas and Mike Snyder. That completes the opinion section of USA Today by Joe Palmer on Wednesday, May 8th, 2024. This is the money section of USA Today on Wednesday, May 8th, 2024, read by Joe Palmer. Only Subaru Forester gets good crash rating. Would your SUV ace a front crash test? Odds aren't great. The Insurance Institute for Highway Safety on Thursday said that only the Subaru Forester received a good rating in the agency's newly updated test that assesses vehicle-to-vehicle front crashes at high speed. The Insurance Institute tested 2023-2024 cars at various speeds up to 43 miles per hour, while previous tests only went as high as 25 miles per hour. The agency said that here are the rest of the ratings. Average Honda CR-V, Toyota RAV4, moderate Ford Escape, Hyundai Tucson, Jeep Compass, poor Chevrolet Equinox, Mazda CX-5, Mitsubishi Outlander, and Volkswagen Taos. USDA recalls ground beef over risk of E. coli. The U.S. Department of Agriculture announced Wednesday that more than 16,000 pounds of ground beef has been recalled over potential E. coli contamination. Cargill Meat Solutions recalled ground beef packages with an establishment ID of EST86P, produced between April 26th and the 27th. The packages, which does not have the Cargill brand on its top packaging, have been shipped to Walmart stores in 11 states and Washington, D.C., according to Cargill. The USDA said that there have been no reports of people falling ill. Ex-Starbucks CEO Schultz has advice for the chain. Former Starbucks CEO Howard Schultz has a few words for his former company. While commenting on its disappointing quarterly earnings, Schultz said the coffee chain needs to improve the experience at its U.S. stores. He urged the company to reinvent its mobile ordering and payment platform to make it the uplifting experience it was designed to be, and he called for executives to overhaul its go-to-market strategy and boost coffee-forward innovation to create differentiation in the marketplace. Apple lets loose with iPad updates, thinnest device yet. Event reveals new tablet features, redesigned Magic Keyboard, and more. By Felicia Wellington Radel. With its online Let Loose event Tuesday morning, Apple unleashed what CEO Tim Cook called the biggest day for iPad since the introduction. A new iPad Air with a 13-inch display, more storage, and more color options led off the announcements, with Apple already accepting orders and the device already as early as next week. The new iPad Pro is the thinnest Apple product to date and introduces a new display called Tandem OLED with two organic LED panels and an updated chip that gives the tablet a huge boost in processing speed. The unveiling included a chance for users to accessorize both iPads with the new Apple Pencil Pro and Magic Keyboard. The price of the existing 10-inch iPad also got an update, lowering its starting point to $349. Apple live-streamed the event on its YouTube channel as well as on the company's website. Here's a closer look at the devices and the features revealed during the event. iPad Air. The iPad Air will now come in two sizes, an 11-inch display and a 13-inch display. Both will have the updated M2 chip. Apple is adding 512 megabytes and 1 terabyte options for storage, and the iPad Air will work with the Magic Keyboard. Other key changes include the front-facing camera being moved to the landscaped edge and in the inclusion of spatial audio. New color options include blue and purple, in addition to the existing starlight and space gray finishes. The 11-inch iPad Air starts at $599, and the 13-inch starts at $799. Apple began accepting orders Tuesday and said the devices will be available next week. iPad Pro. Both the 11-inch and 13-inch versions of the iPad Pro, which will be available in silver and space black, will feature the new Tandem OLED display. The iPad Pro will also now have the M4 chip, also introduced during the presentation, jumping all the way from M2, which Apple said will make the device 4 times faster. The updated image can help with the document scanning. The new iPad Pro models will be available next week. The 11-inch starts at $999 and the 13-inch at $1,299. Magic Keyboard. The Magic Keyboard has been redesigned to be thinner and lighter, Apple said, to work with thinner iPad Pros. It will come in two colors to match the iPad Pro, have a row of function keys, and an aluminum track pack. The Magic Keyboard will come in two sizes. The 11-inch starts at $299, and the 13-inch starts at $249. Apple Pencil Pro. Users can squeeze the pencil to bring up a selected tool, and the pencil will have a gyroscope for precise control of the tool being used. Apple Pencil Pro will also now support Find My, so users can locate it if they've misplaced it. Similar to the previous pencil, Pencil Pro carries and charges magnetically. The new Apple Pencil Pro starts at $129 and will be available next week. Final Cut Pro and Logic Pro updates. Updates to Final Cut Pro and Logic Pro are a treat for creators. For Final Cut Pro, Apple introduced a live multicam feature in which a user can connect up to 4 cameras. The company also announced a new app for iPhone and iPad. Final Cut Camera will also allow users to connect 4 iPhones or iPads for video shoots. Updates to Logic Pro include new drums and effects, and it can now use the machine learning model and sound install. More from Apple. Tuesday's event came about a month before the company's annual Worldwide Developers Conference, which will be online June 10th to the 14th. Apple often announces new features and updates to its operating systems across devices. Tipping Point. Survey says consumers give nearly $500 a year more than they'd like. By Betty Lynn Fisher. Do you feel a ping of awkwardness or pressure when you see a tip request pop up on a screen at the end of a transaction? In other words, are you guilt tipping? You're not alone. Americans spend nearly $500 a year tipping more than they'd like to, according to a new study. Talker Research, a research and polling agency, recently surveyed 2,000 Americans asking how much tipflation may be impacting people's wallets. The poll found the average respondent reluctantly tips $37.80 a month due to the pressure of tipping option presented to them. That figure equates to $453.60 a year in guilt-induced gratuity, with over a quarter, 26%, feeling they are always or often forced to tip more than they would like to, Talker Research said in the post about its findings. We know that tipping has been a hot topic, Dan Barding, head of media relations for Talker Research, told USA Today. It's trended on TikTok. There's all kinds of online conversations about it. It's been in news as people transitioned out of high peaks of COVID and delivery services. Darden said Talker Research noticed that a lot of businesses have kept their automatic gratuity that was popular during the pandemic. Talker Research wanted to get reactions from consumers on their feelings about tipping, including how people of different generations feel, he said. Do we really need to tip? According to the survey, the average respondent tipped more than they'd like on 6 occasions within the past 30 days. Whether it's watchful eyes of the barista, the hastily swiveled tablet, or the waiter handing you the card machine, more than half, 56% of respondents note that pressure to tip higher is a regular occurrence, Talker Research said in its post about the survey. Only 24% said it was a rare experience for them to feel put on the spot when tipping. Here are some of the results from the survey. 49% of the respondents said they noticed their options for tipping on tablets and digital devices increased in value in the past month alone. Nearly a third, 31%, answered that they had been asked to tip for a service they wouldn't normally consider tipping. Men feel pressure to tip higher more often than women, 28% versus 25%. Do people of different generations feel differently about tipping? There are generational differences in how people feel about tipping. Gen Z, 16%, Millennials, 16%, were almost twice as likely to say they always feel pressure to tip than older generations, the study said. Just 9% of Gen X and only 5% of Boomers felt the same constant tipping obligation. When tipping in-store, a third, Gen Z, 33%, Millennials, 33%, always or often feel pressured or made to feel guilty when tipping. That compares to 23% for Gen X and 13% for Boomers. Should you tip a machine? The pressure to tip also doesn't require service for a human. 23% of all those who surveyed said they would likely leave a tip for a service that required no human interaction, such as vending machine or self-checkout kiosk at the grocery store, Talker Research reported. Betty Lynn Fisher is a consumer reporter for USA Today. Reach her at blynnfisher@usatoday.com or follow her on X, Facebook, or Twitter at blynnfisher. Real ID card needed if you plan to fly in 2025 by Amaris Encinas. If you plan on flying around the country in 2025 and beyond, you might want to listen up. You have about 365 days to make your state-issued driver's license or identification Real ID complaint per the Department of Homeland Security. The Real ID compliance is a part of a larger act passed by Congress in 2005 to set minimum security standards for the distribution of identification materials, including driver's license. This means that certain federal agencies like the Transportation Security Administration or DHS won't be able to accept state-issued forms of identification without the Real ID seal. It's taken a while for compliance to stick, with DHS originally giving a 2020 deadline before pushing it back another year, then another 2 years, and another 2 years after that, due to backlog transactions at MVD offices nationwide, according to the previous USA Today reports. You won't be able to board federally regulated commercial aircraft, enter nuclear power plants, or access certain facilities if your identification documents aren't Real ID compliant by May 7, 2025. Here's what we know about the Real IDs, including where to get one and why you should be thinking about getting one yourself. Do I have to get a Real ID? Not necessarily. If you have another form of identification that TSA accepts, there probably is an immediate reason to obtain one, at least for travel purposes. If you don't have another form of identification and would like to travel around the country in the near future, you should try to obtain one. Here are all the other TSA-approved forms of identification. State-issued enhanced driver's license, U.S. passport, U.S. passport card, DHS trusted traveler's card, Global Entry, Nexus, Century, Fast, U.S. Department of Defense ID, permanent resident card, border crossing card, an acceptable photo ID issued by a federally recognized tribal nation Indian tribe, HSPD-12 PIV card, foreign government issued passport, Canadian provincial driver's license or Indian and Northern Affairs Canadian card, transportation worker identification credential, U.S. citizenship and immigration services employment authorization card, U.S. merchant mariner credential, veteran health identification card. However, federal agencies may only accept state-issued driver's license or identification cards that are Real ID compliant if you are trying to gain access to a federal facility. That includes TSA security checkpoints. Enhanced driver's license only issued by Washington, Michigan, Minnesota, New York, and Vermont are considered acceptable alternatives to Real ID compliant cards, according to DHS. What can I use my Real ID for? For most people, it's all about boarding flights. You can only use your real ID card to obtain access to nuclear power plants, access certain facilities, or board federally regulated commercial aircrafts, according to DHS. The cards can't be used to travel across any border, whether that's Canada, Mexico, or any other international destination, according to DHS. How do I get a real ID? All you have to do to get a real ID is to make time to head over to your local Department of Motor Vehicles. Every state is different, so the documents you need to verify your identity will vary. DHS says that at a minimum, you will be asked to produce your full legal name, date of birth, social security number, two proofs of address, of principal residence, and lawful status. The only difference between the state-issued forms of identification you have now and the Real ID compliant card you hope to obtain is a unique marking stamped in the right corner. The mark stamped in your Real ID compliant cards depends on the state. Trump vows to crush anti-white racism. Former president says it can't be allowed in U.S. by Jessica Yun. Lending his voice to anti-diversity, equity, and inclusion fervor sweeping the Republican Party, Donald Trump telegraphed a dramatic shift to America's approach to civil rights if he wins a second term as president, vowing to focus on anti-white racism, not on racism against people of color. Asked about supporters who believe anti-white racism now represents a greater problem than anti-black racism, the former president told Time magazine, "I think there's a definite anti-white feeling in this country, and that can't be allowed." In the exclusive interview, Trump also said he would use the U.S. military to deport 11 million undocumented immigrants, deploy the National Guard to quash protests, and gut the U.S. Civil Service. Trump on board with plan to curb affirmative discrimination. Led by the Heritage Foundation think tank, which has helped mold the policies of Republican administrators since the Reagan presidency, conservative activists have drawn up an expansive plan known as Project 2025 in anticipation of Trump's return to power. One of the goals of the presidential transition plan is reversing the DEI revolution by eliminating policies and programs such as affirmative action, which Project 2025 calls affirmative discrimination. The plan broadly reflects where Trump's policy stood at the end of his presidency in 2020. In September of that year, his administration issued an executive order prohibiting racial sensitivity training by the federal government and government contractors. The order had an immediate chilling effect on efforts to reverse historical patterns of discrimination and exclusion in the workplace. President Joe Biden rescinded the order after taking office in 2021. Trump aids allies attack DEI revolution. During the Biden administration, conservative activists picked up the mantle, claiming white workers are being unfairly disadvantaged by diversity, equity, and inclusion initiatives that benefit minorities. GOP-led legislators have introduced dozens of bills to restrict diversity, equity, and inclusions in education, state government, contracting, and pensions and investments. Last year's Supreme Court decision striking down affirmative action in college admissions set off a wave of legal challenges from former Trump's administration official Stephen Miller and anti-affirmative action activist Edward Blum. Billionaires Elon Musk and Bill Ackman have also assailed DEI efforts as racist. These efforts have gained momentum. In 2021, a federal judge in Florida blocked a debt relief program for black farmers. Last month, a federal judge in Texas ruled that a government agency created to boost the fortunes of minority-owned businesses was discriminating against white people and must now serve everyone, regardless of race. Civil rights advocates reject the notion that America has a problem with anti-white racism. Mark Morial, president of the National Urban League, said conservative activists are advocating for the return of white privilege. They're advocating for the policies that were used during a segregated America, Morial told USA Today in March. Corporate America has a diversity problem. Alvin B. Tillery Jr., director of the Center of Study of Democracy and Diversity at Northwestern University, told USA Today that the conservatives vilify diversity, equity, and inclusion, and advance false charges of anti-white racism in an attempt to convince Americans that the nation has solved anti-black racism. There are just code words they're using to talk amongst themselves about reconstituting the racial order they want, Tillery told USA Today in March. As the nation grows more diverse and researchers' studies suggest that diverse companies outperform more homogeneous peers, businesses are working to make their workforces and leadership better to reflect the communities they serve. After the 2020 murder of George Floyd forced a historic reckoning with the race in America, corporations redoubled those efforts. Racial parity in the business world is a long way off. A USA Today investigation of the nation's largest companies found that the top ranks are predominantly white and male, while women and people of color are concentrated at the lowest levels with less pay, fewer perks, and little opportunity for advancement. Corporate diversity efforts are broadly supported by the American public. A vast majority of adults, 81%, believe the corporate America should reflect the nation's diversity, according to a recent study in the Harris Poll. Trump vows to reverse Biden's woke equity program. Trump has promised to reverse the Biden administration's woke equity programs and said he will call on Congress to establish a restitution fund for those unjustly discriminated against by these destructive policies. Every institution in America is under attack from the Marxist concept of equity, Trump said last year. Most white voters supporting Trump believe the racial minorities are favored over white people, according to a CBS poll in November. If you look right now, there's absolutely a bias against white people, and that's a problem, Trump told Time. During his spate of legal troubles, Trump was frequently claimed he, too, is a target of anti-white racism. Disney World, Disneyland's Halloween plans begin in August, by Nathan Diller. Halloween may not be until the fall, but at Disney theme parks, the spooky season starts in August. Mickey's Not-So-Scary Halloween Party is coming back to Walt Disney World, and Oogie Boogie Bash, a Disney Halloween party, will return to Disneyland Resort. The after-hour events, which are not included in regular theme park admission, will take place on select dates at Magic Kingdom and Disney California Adventure Park from August through October. Kids and grown-ups alike can see their favorite characters dressed up and donned costumes of their own and go trick-or-treating in the parks. Here's what to expect this year. When is Mickey Not So Scary Halloween Party 2024? The celebration will run from 7 p.m. to midnight on the following dates: August 9th, 13th, 16th, 20th, 23rd, 27th, and 30th. September 2nd, 6th, 8th, 10th, 13th, 15th, 17th, 20th, 22nd, 24th, 26th, 27th, 29th. October 1st, 3rd, 4th, 6th, 8th, 10th, 11th, 14th, 15th, 17th, 18th, 20th, 21st, 24th, 25th, 27th, 29th, 31st. Tickets go on sale May 15th, but guests staying at select hotels can get advance access beginning on Wednesday. A full list is available on Walt Disney World's website. What's new at Mickey's Not-So-Scary Halloween? This year, Disney Parks will introduce a new Descendants party inspired by the film Descendants, The Rise of Red, coming in Disney Plus in July. The rave will take place at Tomorrowland's Rocket Tower Plaza stage. Mickey's party will also feature other firsts, including a debut appearance from Bruno Madrigal. For the first time during the party, you can meet the clairvoyant character from Encanto alongside Maribel and their casita in Fairy Tale Garden, Disney Park said in a blog post. There will also be more villain sightings, new neon spiderweb themes looks for Mickey and Minnie, and earlier start time for Mickey's Boo to You Halloween Parade, 8:15, an hour earlier than past years, allowing younger guests to attend before bedtime. There will be plenty of familiar programming too, including Disney's Not-So-Spooky Spectacular Fireworks Show, the Hocus Pocus Villain Spectacular Stage Production, and more. Reservations for Disney's Not-So-Spooky Spectacular Desert Party, which offers the chance to watch fireworks from Tomorrowland Terrace or Plaza Garden, will be available June 7th. How much does Not-So-Scary Halloween Party cost? Tickets range from $119 to $199 per ticket before tax, depending on the date. Disney Vacation Club members and annual pass holders can get a 10% or $10 discount on each ticket for our August and September dates. Ticket holders can enter Magic Kingdom beginning at 4 p.m. and do not need a separate day theme park at or reservation. When is the Oogie Boogie Bash, a Disney Halloween party 2024? The event will take place on the following dates: August 25th, 27th, 29th, September 3rd, 10th, 12th, 15th, 17th, 19th, 22nd, 24th, 26th, 29th, October 1st, 3rd, 6th, 8th, 10th, 13th, 15th, 17th, 20th, 22nd, 24th, 27th, 29th, and 31st. Fifty states. Montgomery, Alabama. Governor Kay Ivey gave final approval for the creation of the Alabama School of Healthcare Sciences. The purpose of the school is to grant educational opportunities to high school students in science, technology, engineering, math, and medicine and healthcare sciences field. Palmer, Alaska. The state top public safety said plans to grant expanded arrest authority to Chickaloon tribal police officers is being halted, Anchorage Daily News reported. Phoenix, Arizona. Technology aimed at improving road safety in Metro Phoenix will get a boost from federal grants awarded to Phoenix and Arizona Commerce Authority. Little Rock, Arkansas. Governor Sarah Huckabee Sanders signed an executive order objecting to aspects of an updated set of rules related to Title IX, the federal law which bans sex-based discrimination at any schools to receive federal funding. Palm Springs, California. After past reviews by the Environmental Protection Agency found the Desert View power plant had repeatedly emitted illegal high levels of mercury and other dangerous pollutants into the eastern Coachella Valley, its operator announced that the plant will immediately pause its operations as it seeks a path forward. Denver, Colorado. A University of Colorado study showed some of the Colorado's native pollinator populations have declined by 50% over the past 35 years. The state commissioned Native Pollinating Insects Protection Study to determine the health of the Colorado's pollinators showed imperiled species of butterflies and bumblebees, and it indicated that species are likely to tip the iceberg at the huge underestimate of true scope of imperiled pollinator species. Hartford, Connecticut. As legislators learned state budget surpluses would top our approached $1 billion through 2026, leaders said Connecticut must scale back an aggressive savings program that critics say is choking core programs, the CT Mirror reported. Rehoboth Beach, Delaware. The 50-foot fin whale that beached itself on Delaware Seashore State Park on Sunday died overnight. Washington, D.C. A driver was found dead after crashing into an outer perimeter gate of the White House complex, according to the U.S. Secret Service. West Palm Beach, Florida. Two teens turned themselves in and were charged with felonies after a video went viral of people dumping two barrels of trash from a boat into the ocean during April 28th Boca Bash event, reporters say. Atlanta, Georgia. Governor Brian Kemp signed a controversial cash bail bill into law in a move that bail reform advocates see as unraveling decades of progress on criminal justice policies. The law takes effect on July 1st. Honolulu, Hawaii. Airbnb listings and other short-term vacation rentals in Hawaii are one step closer to being phased out as the state grapples with a housing crisis exacerbated by last year's wildfires on Maui. A bill with the potential to reshape vacation rental regulation across the state passed the Senate and the House and now awaits Hawaii Governor Josh Green's signature, who already promised to sign it if it hits his desk. If signed, the new law will go in effect July 1st. Banks, Idaho. Officials said a traffic citation was issued to the driver of a school bus that crashed in 2023 while traveling from YMCA camp. Bloomington, Indiana. Faculty from Indiana University's Kelley Business School of Business called for the Board of Trustees to terminate the employment of President Pamela Whitten and Provost Raul Sharistvav, the latest in growing number of college-wide votes calling for a change in administration. Des Moines, Iowa. Iowa cyclists and wheelchair users will now have greater protection when using crosswalks under the law signed by Governor Kim Reynolds. The law, House filed 2568, requires drivers to yield to the right of the way of cyclists, people while using wheelchairs, and other crosswalk users who aren't on foot. Topeka, Kansas. Kansas Attorney General Chris Kobach told higher education officials that pro-Palestine protesters at the University of Kansas are making an illegal demand. Kobach referred to the protesters as uninformed, pollutant loudmouths who have not done their research and whose views are reprehensible. Louisville, Kentucky. Since 2020, Louisville has been losing residents while surrounding counties' populations have grown, a trend some say is troubling as the city seeks to attract more businesses and talent. New estimates from the U.S. Census Bureau show a 1.4% decline, just under 11,000 people, in Jefferson County population between April 2020 and July 2023. And while the number might seem small, it represents a sizable dent when considering the county added about 42,000 people between 2010 and 2020. Houma, Louisiana. At the Dulcapatoon Bridge, about 30 well-wishers were gathered as USS Kidd sliced northward, headed for a year-long overhaul in Houma. The Kidd, a 370-foot Fletcher-class destroyer, saw major action in World War II, was later deployed in the Korean War, and has been in Baton Rouge since 1982, where it serves an integral component of a namesake veterans museum and memorial. The destroyer completed a 315 nautical mile voyage from its Mississippi River berth to Houma's Thoma Sea Marine Constructor Shipyard, where it will undergo an overhaul and restoration for almost a year. Portland, Maine. Authorities are investigating after two people were injured in a crash on Interstate 295. Bel Air, Maryland. A bus with dozens of people on board crashed on a Maryland highway and resulted in one death and multiple injuries. Boston, Massachusetts. Massachusetts highest court on Monday weighed whether ballot proposals that would redefine the relationship between app-based companies like Uber and Lyft and their drivers would be allowed to go before voters in November. Farmington Hills, Michigan. Deer are a reality of life in Michigan's urban areas, but communities throughout Metro Detroit are hoping to find ways to reduce their numbers in the coming years. Farmington Hills, in conjunction with others, has been working in recent years to establish a regional plan across Metro Detroit. Eden Prairie, Minnesota. A fire department is mourning after one of its own was killed in a shootout over the weekend, police said. Eden Prairie firefighter Joseph C. Johns died tragically while off duty on Sunday morning, the city of Eden Prairie said in a Facebook post. Oxford, Mississippi. Viral footage of a University of Mississippi student appearing to mimic a monkey toward a black man who was part of a pro-Palestinian protest has resulted in the school launching a probe into his actions. St. Louis, Missouri. A former Boy Scout volunteer was sentenced to 22 years in prison for hiding cameras in bathrooms at Missouri camp. David Lee Nelson, 41, was also ordered to pay $61,810 in penalties, a portion of which will go to fund for victims prevention program. More than $6,000 of that money will also pay for his victims to receive counseling, a federal judge ordered according to the U.S. Attorney's Office. Missoula, Montana. A new exhibit that shines a light on the missing and murdered indigenous people crisis has opened in Missoula. Decatur, Nebraska. Officials said that fire severely damaged the historic Decatur Museum. Carson City, Nevada. The Nevada Wildlife Commission voted to allow hunters to kill 42 bears a year, more than twice the number permitted to be slaughtered in the first decade of the hunt, which began in 2011. Exeter, New Hampshire. A board cross-section of Exeter citizens and civic leaders turned out Saturday morning to unveil a Black Heritage Trail of New Hampshire historical marker honoring Exeter's Black Revolutionary War community. Trent, New Jersey. Despite improvements in the state's beleaguered unemployment system, over 700,000 New Jerseyans still face barriers to the jobless benefits. Las Cruces, New Mexico. The Las Cruces Police Department arrested the co-owner of now shuttered daycare facility after investigators learned the 78-year-old man allegedly sexually assaulted a young child. Albany, New York. New York State's top prosecutors sued Heartbeat International, an anti-abortion group, and 11 crisis pregnancy centers, accusing them of misleading and potentially endangering women. North Carolina, Wilmington, North Carolina. A pop-off satellite tag belonging to one of the great white sharks in Okerch Global Shark Tracker Research Program has washed up on the shores of Ocean Isle Beach in Brunswick County. Grafton, North Dakota. The National Rural Rating System has awarded Unity Medical Center a 4-star rating. Cleveland, Ohio. An Amazon delivery driver shot and killed an alleged 17-year-old carjacker in Cleveland over the weekend, prompting investigation according to multiple reports. Oklahoma City, Oklahoma. Attorneys for State Schools Superintendent Ryan Walters and Oklahoma State Department of Education have asked Oklahoma County Judge to dismiss a lawsuit filed by two teachers who received a $50,000 bonus in error. Ski, Oregon. The Oregon Department of Agriculture has pulled a wader permit. Skeo, Oregon. The Oregon Department of Agriculture has pulled a water permit for a proposed Foster Farms chicken complex. Butler, Pennsylvania. A Pennsylvania nurse connected to the deaths of 17 patients who were given fatal doses of insulin was sentenced to hundreds of years behind bars. Heather Presti of Notre Heights pleaded guilty in Butler County courtroom to 3 counts of first-degree murder and 19 counts of criminal attempted commit murder. Providence, Rhode Island. The expected price tag for tearing down the doomed westbound Washington Bridge and building a new one climbed to at least a third to $400 million. Columbia, South Carolina. South Carolina U.S. Representative James Clyburn received the Presidential Medal of Freedom, the nation's highest civilian honor. President Joe Biden presented the medal to Clyburn and 18 other recipients in the White House on Friday. Pierre, South Dakota. The South Dakota Board of Regents has recently agreed to pay a former international student advisor of the University of South Dakota $100,000 to settle a lawsuit she brought alleging sexual harassment, sex discrimination, and retaliation. Nashville, Tennessee. Environmental groups are suing to stop the construction of a 32-mile natural gas pipeline to Tennessee Valley Authority's Cumberland's power plant. Fort Worth, Texas. A young child was found dead on Sunday near Fort Worth, and hundreds have been rescued from floodwaters as the state was hit by extreme weather. Hurricane Utah. Authorities said an 18-year-old man from Nevada drowned at Sand Hollows Creek State Park. Burlington, Vermont. University of Vermont Medical Center researchers found a 900% increase over 2 years in blood infections linked primarily to people who injected drugs, most of whom were also experiencing homelessness. Richmond, Virginia. Former president and presumptive Republican nominee Donald Trump's campaign sees Virginia as in play for November election. Port Orchard, Washington. Longtime theater group Western Washington Center for Arts is moving after 22 years. Charleston, West Virginia. Senator Joe Manchin announced that Raleigh and McDowell counties will be receiving federal funds to enhance the health services in two regions. Neenah, Wisconsin. Government spending on Neenah infrastructure and equipment is projected to rise sharply next year. The city's newly approved capital improvement plan lists $105.6 million in expenditures in the next 4 years, including $42.7 million in 2025. Cheyenne, Wyoming. Yellowstone actor Jefferson White will visit the city in July for the 10th annual Wyoming International Film Festival, Wyoming Tribune Eagle reported. This is the completion of the money section of USA Today on Wednesday, May 8th, 2024, read by Joe Palmer.